Sound with me, Morgan Brown. I hope everyone is staying healthy and safe. Look, I think it's getting to the end of this, hopefully. Looks like there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Let's just all stay together. Let's stay healthy. Let's stay safe and keep doing what we're doing. Wear a mask out. I'm sorry. I don't want to be ranty today, but I think we're all getting really tired of this. And that was a lot of our conversation today, actually. So on the podcast is Cinemartyr, amazing, amazing musician who I had the pleasure of talking to. We played a show pre-COVID. I played a show with his band Art Girls, and they were amazing. But then throughout this interview, we talk about how COVID can change a band, can change a life, but honestly, a band can change within a couple months. But we talked a lot about being creative, being an artist during COVID. It's a very weird time to be a creative, I'll definitely say that. And I think we had a very lovely chat about what it takes to be a performer and a creative and an artist. So I had a really great interview with Cinemartyr, and we talk a lot about that stuff. So please hang in there. Guys, it's almost over, I promise. Let's just keep working together. And here's my interview with Cinemartyr, and check it out and have a really lovely day. And I'll see you next week. So thank you so much again. I know this has been such a long time coming because it's just the life has been crazy. But how have you been doing with COVID?
It's such a weird thing to say. I mean, I just feel very grateful that it hasn't completely sucked for me. I know it sucks for a lot of people out there, but if you're the artistic type and you're lucky enough to have not lost your job in the last while, it's weird. It's a total curse, but there's like a silver lining too. Like, a lot of us have more time to be with people we like and to slow down a bit and work on music and work on art and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I'm feeling very grateful and lucky that, you know, no one close to me, no one back home in Ireland has gotten sick yet. And we've been okay here. We just moved house apartment right before this all happened. We were in a not so good situation before this, and now we settled in somewhere we like, and it's been okay.
Still in New York? You're still.
Yeah, we just moved from Harlem to the Bronx.
Okay, cool. Always. I mean, that's not even bad. I remember. Were you living in Brooklyn for a while, or?
I was in Brooklyn. Well, a few years ago, yeah, I was in Brooklyn for like a couple of years. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, how do you like the Bronx so far?
It's beautiful, dude. It's so cool up here. We're right by Yankee Stadium. And,
oh, nice.
Yeah, it feels a bit more real. I don't want to cast any shade on certain
Brooklyn. Totally. Trust me. But, I get it. It's definitely a more, quote unquote, an authentic New York experience would be, you know, somewhat cliche, but at the same time, I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Where are you right now?
So I'm currently in Boston right now, which is where I'm from. Yeah. And then I live on Staten Island, which is the farthest you could possibly be from the Bronx and still be in New York.
I was gonna say I've been to Staten Island a handful of times, and like it's got such a weird reputation, but I just remember it being kind of gray but like also cozy. And
I mean, if you want a real authentic New York experience, I will say there's nothing else than going to Staten Island, because people talk about like the city changing and gentrification and everything. Staten Island has not been updated since like 95.
Yeah.
Like nothing has changed at all.
Yeah, it has that vibe for sure.
Nothing has changed whatsoever. But so I wanted to talk to you because I was introduced to your band Art Girls, which I definitely want to get into. Mm. But also, the more I did research on everything,
Your outlook on music and creativity in general is so interesting, and I wanted to, I know it's like was a little odd when I first like met you and Art Girls and stuff, and I asked to do the podcast because then it was obviously months later, and then COVID happened, and then it was, there were a lot of delays and everything else. But just through going through everything, when did you start first getting into music? Was it when you were still in Ireland, or were you, when did you move to the States and start working? Like, what was your process in your first early years of like working on music specifically?
Oh man, yeah, it was in Ireland. I lived there until I was like 23 or 24, I think. And yeah, just like kind of like I guess most people, like in our circles, like as a young teen, I guess, like I mean, I was always obsessed with music, listening to it forever. Just like, I grew up in a traditional Irish music home, so there was always, my dad puts on shows around the country for traditional Irish music, which I mean, I cannot stand now, but somehow it leaked into my brain, and so I was always surrounded by it. But by the time I got to like, you know, 13, 14, the guitar suddenly like existed, and I was like, holy crap, that's the kind of music I want to do.
Yeah, I definitely also want to get into your guitars and like your work on like the guitars, like your modifications and stuff are so out of this world. I definitely want to get into that. But you were starting to work in Ireland, so you were starting you had that musical background, and then where did it go from there?
There's one very seminal moment for everyone. I live in a really small town called Limerick, or like it's the third largest city in Ireland, I think, but it's, you know, that's fucking small. It's like two main streets and like a bunch of side streets. It's a little, it would be considered a small town here, I think. But Fugazi came to our town when I was like 14, and I was like, there's Americans coming to our city. This is so odd. Like, why are they coming here? And they played this little venue. I'd never been to a show before. I'd never been around like extremely loud amplified music and amplified drums or whatever. And I was like, look, these guys are from Washington. They're from America. We just got to go see them. We were all into The Offspring, and I was really into like Pearl Jam and all this stuff. But Fugazi, like all the older guys around us were like, you have to go. And it was all ages because Fugazi only did all ages shows. And I remember being outside the venue and I could hear them sound checking the bass drum, and I could feel it like in my chest outside the venue. I was like, what the fuck is this gonna be? Like, what the hell am I in for? And then it was just like, not to sound like overly cheesy or like glorifying it too much, but it literally was like a life-changing experience. Like, it was just so intense. We were all soaked in sweat when we came out of it. And it, for me, it was the way Ian MacKaye spoke to everyone.
Yeah, for sure.
There was like no barrier between us and him. He was just like such a normal dude, no rock star bullshit. And all of us the next day, me and all my buddies, like five of us went there, and we all started bands the next day. So it was like, it changed
there
us.
There was a big boom in Limerick.
Yes. Huge. Suddenly boom. Everyone was in a fucking punk band, and that's awesome. my first band was called Not Important, and I was not super into the music we ended up playing. It was kind of like a little bit standard punk stuff, but that was the start for me, and slowly started playing shows around our little city and getting to know people there, and that was kind of where I was first like, oh, this is a like I'm totally obsessed with this. Like, I was having dreams. I was having these weird dreams where I had for some reason I always had an acoustic guitar, but like I was rocking out really hard in my living room with my two parents watching me, and they were embarrassed for me. But that was this recurring dream I would have kind of leading up to the Fugazi show and then afterwards. And yeah, that was
but that's it. A really big moment for anyone. I feel like even me in like growing up in Boston and stuff, like you still had those experiences when you're 14 or 15 and you see a band that you're completely obsessed with, or later even become obsessed with after seeing them. Like, it really is a huge moment. So then when was the big jump to America for you?
Yeah, there's something going on with your brain at that age. Like, you're so receptive.
Completely. You take in everything.
Yes, the sponge level of your brain is just so porous. And, like, it's so formative. Like, some bands around that time just fucking, like, seared themselves into my... to sear yourself themselves into your brain, and then, you know, you grow a bit older and you get a little bit more pretentious and you want to distance yourself from some stuff, like maybe, you know, like you don't want to admit that you love Linkin Park that much. But now as I'm in my 30s, I'm like, fuck it, I love all that shit again. It was so amazing.
No, it is, dude. I used to work at this little like this record store, comic book store, which is like where but it was so crazy because I was like 16 and I was obviously like very into like, oh, like pop punk and like, you know, hardcore and stuff. But then I had like my managers who were like in their 30s being like, oh, you should check out like Placebo and like Depeche Mode and like all of these like goth or like emo or like post punk. Like just everyone had their own sense of like music. So working in an environment where all we did was talk about music, like I was exposed to so much. And that's why like I just like having the podcast, just because it's fun to talk to like people just to understand like what like they like or anything else, and just to discuss like creativity in general. You know,
it's so important. Like in our society, we, you know, we have things that are shown to you to be really important, but like when you look back at your life, it's stuff like that you remember, dude. It's like having those big brothers or big sisters who showed you stuff like and like those really formative experiences, you know. That's not like, that's so important, and cataloging that in the form of a podcast or like getting the engine going for your own creative projects by talking with other people about that stuff is so important, I think.
For sure. Now, when did you make the move to America? Like, when did you okay, I have to leave Ireland. I'm going to go do other things now.
Yeah, I mean, I love Ireland and all that, but I went to art school in my hometown after high school. I went to art school and was still playing music and stuff and doing a bit of touring, but no, like no shade to Ireland, but basically it kind of starts to feel like a small town. The whole country feels like a little bit of a small town if you've spent enough time there, if you've grown up there, especially like everyone in the art scene. Like if you're in the art scene in Limerick, you know all the people in Dublin. The people in the music scene in Dublin know all the people in the other music scenes and all the other counties. It's just, it's very small. And I guess when I was in my like 22 or 20, I actually went to New York on a class trip when I was in my first year of art college, and it fucking blew my mind, dude. When I saw like a yellow cab, I was like screaming like a little school kid, you know. Like
take a lot of that for granted, I guess, man.
Yeah, like I mean, now I'm just like I'm so over some of it, but when I first went on my first school trip, I think it was 2008, and it just, I like the background of so many bands I loved, and the history of New York, like Jeff Buckley and the art scene in the 80s, Basquiat and all that. Like I was just totally obsessed with that stuff, and when I came here, it suddenly felt very real on a school trip. So for the next 3 years in art school, I was like, when this is done, I'm just moving there. It's like, it's such a like pain in the ass thing to do with visas and immigration and all that, but I was like, I'll just make it work. And I came here in 2012 on a 1 year student visa, and my parents and all that were like, oh, you'll be back after that. But in my head, I was like, I'm fucking staying.
For sure.
So, yeah, I got here in 2012 and was very green and just like, what's the word? Face planted onto the
concrete. It's definitely different, you know? I mean, I feel like it's definitely something that when you come from such a small place like New York, or honestly, anywhere, any major city you move to after that is going to be, make it feel like the world is completely a different place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think I think that you, if you are definitely inspired by like the 80s New York scene and everything else, I mean, starting bands and working with other people in the art scene in New York was probably like obviously a dream come true for you.
That was the biggest draw for me, was just like, holy crap, like you can put a friggin' ad on Craigslist and you will find four people to play with the next day. We were all sharing a drummer in Limerick, you know. There's like five drummers, and like one of them is the heavy dude and the rock dude, and he'll be in like a few bands. So when I came here, I was just like, oh, there'll be other weirdos, you know. So
well, there's definitely a huge sense of community. There's a huge sense of community with any genre that you're doing, and I think one of the coolest things about New York is that you can still like, you can have shows and play bills where every single band is a completely different genre, but everyone still respects everyone so much still.
Yeah.
And everyone still is like very supportive of everyone else. I think that's a very important thing that people like focus on, specifically with like especially DIY shows, whether it be in like Brooklyn or any other like local like punk stuff, or I mean any genre. I feel like it's, New York has a lot of that.
But yeah,
So when you first moved to New York officially and you were starting bands, when did the actual Cinder Martyr project start? Was that already back in Ireland that you've been working on, or was it coming to the U.S.?
I had been, as I mentioned, I'd been playing in bands with like the same members for so long, and most of them were just into more straight up rock stuff, kind of 4/4 punk stuff, and I was into a little bit of stranger stuff, I guess. So I started OST before I moved to New York. It was called OST at the time. Now it's now called Cinder Martyr, but I started it as a way to like get that stuff out of my system so I could actually create the stuff I really wanted to create instead of just having the super duper democratic collaborative process where you're just trying to make the best of what you're doing with each other. And it started off very much as a solo project, I guess. So that was around 2010 or 11, I think. And then when I came here, I kind of was just going from band to band again for a while. And it was about 2 or 3 years before I was like, okay, I need to, the OST project had been kind of, it had been kind of mellow. The music had been a little mellower. It was a little bit more indie and experimental. But there was like something I really wanted to do live, which was this like very visceral, like intense, in your face stuff. And I ended up kind of building towards that with Cinder Martyr. And eventually we got the band in its current state now. We got together, I would say, about two or three years ago. And it was started with the drummer Dave Goldman. He had been in a project with me and another Irish guy over here, and he eventually met Amber, who is the guitarist. She sings also in Cinder Martyr, and Amber brought in Aaron. She was friends with Aaron, so it was like I met one person, that person linked us to Amber, and then Amber linked us to Aaron, and everyone knew everyone, so we just kind of came together relatively quick once we found each other, and slowly kind of started building towards more like visceral, in your face experimental project as opposed to like a more laid back indie project.
Well, interesting. It's so odd though, specifically, because I feel like Cinder Martyr, even in itself, like it's like, again, there's not really like a genre that you can throw on, because some of the stuff is extremely visceral. Like, yeah, it's extremely deep. And I wanted to like obviously talk about your relationship between like film and music. Because so many textures that could be taken from like film scoring and everything else, I feel like is a huge portion of the Cinder Martyr stuff. So I wonder what came first. Was it your appreciation and knowledge of music that led you to be able to be like, oh, I actually can create the stuff that I like in movies? Or was it kind of vice versa, where you're like studying film and then and like art, whether it be like painting or any other type of art, was it using those to be like, oh, I can incorporate this into music?
I'd like to say that I was so knowledgeable about music, I could co-opt that stuff and make it work, but it was definitely the other way around.
Okay.
As a kid, I drew since I can remember. I've always drawn since I was remember, and I've always been obsessed with movies. Like, I think the first movie I was ever brought to was either Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or the first Batman movie.
I do really enjoy your film reviews on Instagram, by the way.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
I agreed with your boy's synopsis. I thought that
that
was good. Yeah, no, it was so funny because, again, like, you meet people at like random things and then you collab or say, oh, let's do this or whatever. And like, that was us for the podcast. But then when I started following you on Instagram, I was like, oh, he has really, really good movie opinions as well.
good.
So I was like, oh, I feel the exact same way about a lot of the things that he says. So I'm like, all right, word. I'm glad that he's now my friend.
yeah, dude. I think looking back now, especially through like COVID-colored glasses,
right?
Like, movies become a little bit more important to us, I think. And that some of that stuff is like a respite from what's going on in the world. I mean, it always is, but now it's a little bit more. Like, you can get your 2 hours of like going to a different world, you know?
No, definitely. I mean, I think through my COVID experience, like when I've just been trying to like stay safe and stuff, I've gone down like a really ridiculous rabbit hole for like, I went down the like the 80s horror like hole bad. It was not healthy at some times.
Did you do Evil Dead trilogy again?
Yeah, I did Evil Dead. I did every Friday. I did every Halloween and every Nightmare.
Wow.
It was truly a terrible time.
Terrible, but like a little bit awesome?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. I had one of my really good friends who is a friend of the pod, Steve. He really coached me through a lot of the stuff. He said, wait till you get to the Halloween ones. It's just going to get bad. It's yeah. just not going to be good. But going, I don't want to keep.
You don't want to like relive your past trauma.
Yeah, I don't need to go through it again. But so you're obviously so inspired by film. How does that translate to you through into your music that you've created?
Yeah, yeah. I'll try and answer it, like, I guess. Fucking movies, I don't know, like, you go to art school and you're taught to, like, revere paintings and sculpture and all this, but no, like, for me, it's movies. It's like, I look at them and I'm like, it's such a total art piece, and it, like, so many things come together, the visuals, the music and all that, and I guess, like, I don't know, growing up, I didn't have internet for a long time, I didn't have a computer for a long time. And what I would do is I would, like, rewatch movies over and over again. Like, if I felt bummed out after a day at high school or college or something, I would have my, like, collection of, like, Richard Linklater movies or Hong Kong action movies or whatever. And I would always, those would be, like, my go-to for self-soothing, I think, for, like, a long time. So a lot of that stuff, I would rewatch movies a lot, and a lot of that stuff would get really embedded in my head. And I guess over time, I just kind of came to notice how important the audio side of that was, the score of the side of that was. And I remember, like, playing in these bands, playing a kind of a rigid type of music for a long time growing up, and I wanted to branch out more, and I just thought there was so much freedom in the experimental side of composing music and scoring for film, and, like, matching music to visuals, that kind of opened the floodgates for me creatively. And I think in the last maybe 10 to 8 years, I've been, like, trying to filter that back into, like, an energetic band lens, I guess, through an energetic band lens. So I like the idea of making a soundtrack to, like, a movie that doesn't exist. I think that's really fun, because you know, you can go really overboard with concepts and stuff, but if you just have a general idea of a landscape or a visual landscape that you want to, like, score, and it's, like, becomes your ideal aesthetic or something that, like, really makes you excited, then it becomes like, oh, I'm scoring this thing, as opposed to I'm putting 12 songs together, you know?
No, absolutely. I think there's obviously a storytelling element that I think should be carried in through music, whether it only be sonically or whether it like be with, like, specific lyrics and stuff. I think there are so many amazing bands and artists that can capture that really well. And I was honestly blown away by a lot of the Cinemarter stuff when I was, like, first, like, when I did, like, a deep dive on everything, I think it translated extremely well, man. I think, and all the work that you put into specifically production, which is, I think it's a beast in itself.
I did want to
talk about, so what gave you the idea to do the custom guitars the way you do, man?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I want to start, like, talking about production and stuff. I wanted to talk about, because I never really, when, like, at least the people that I've interviewed, like, recently, or who I've had on the podcast, no one's ever been, like, a very, like, quote unquote, like, technical person, or, like, a very big gear heavy person. But yeah. I feel like, what made you first, like carve your guitars in that way and stuff? It's very fascinating to me.
I think what a lot of people in my, like, in our generation, or people who grew up in certain punk circles, there's a little bit of, like, shaming on the idea that music is a visual medium, that, like, if you look too cool, or, like, if you spend time working on the visuals of your stage show, it's, like, gimmicky or something. And I think that is total bullcrap, because music is actually, live music is a hugely visual experience. And I think your the way you get an instrument off the factory, from the factory floor or whatever, from Guitar Center, everyone has the same thing. It's a uniform. You go to a show and it's like, that guy has the same Telecaster as that guy, or, like, you know, the Stratocaster comes with all these, like, visual echoes you just, like, associate with all the famous Stratocaster guys or whatever. And I just think if you can make your own dent on your guitar visually, it's just that bit more unique. It's like, it's your instrument, it's your, like, musical weapon in a way. and you make it that much more a part of you and a part of the uniqueness of the experience, hopefully. Like,
well, it definitely works, because that was the thing that when you guys first started playing, I was like, what the fuck was he playing? Like, what is that guitar? Like, this is like, and it brought like, oh, this is this project. Like, this is this collective. Like, it made you stand out so much more. Uh-huh. It just in that one way, whether it's like, oh, it made you stand out. Okay, cool. It's a great visual, but you also had the music to back it, and there was like a very specific energy, which it was very interesting. So it definitely worked.
I appreciate that, dude. Thank you. It's you touching on something important there. I think you can do things to be shticky and to have like a novelty, but you thread that fine line between being too uniform and too out there by bringing your unique passion or aesthetic or desire or something to it. You're trying to make it your guitar, not someone else's guitar, not a guitar to impress the audience, not a guitar to say, look, like, this is how wild we are, but like, it's something that excites you. And if the more you do that and just be yourself, it actually ends up hopefully being cooler as a result.
No, right, for sure.
Yeah. And also, I gotta say, there is a practical side to it too. I like to, like, my big thing for me with music is like the band, like, I like bands that move on stage. I like at least one member to be rocking out somewhat. And Telecasters are heavy, so I wanted to take some weight out of it too, so that it was a lighter instrument. And
did it have any other real effects to the sound? Or, I'm curious.
I think it's probably, I mean, everyone asks, does it affect the tone? You know, like, does you remove a big chunk of solid wood, so does it affect the tone? But I don't think it really does in any serious way. I mean, a lot of the tone comes from the rest of the gear. It comes from the pickups and the rest of the gear and the playing. Because you can get those guitars, those super expensive guitars that are basically just like a neck with a tiny body, you know? Like, a lot of those like technical gent dudes will play that kind of stuff. And the tone is totally fine with that without all the wood. So I don't think, maybe for like a super audiophile it would make a difference, but for me it hasn't. It changed the way I play it. It's actually more comfortable. I wear a guitar quite high, and there's this chunk missing now. And it's like, whenever I want to go up high on the fretboard, it's just so easy to get to. And I feel like I can maneuver the guitar a lot easier. So it affects the tone in that I play better, a little bit, like 10% better maybe. So,
got you. But now, are you a huge like pedal person or?
Yeah, I mean, oh my God. I think, so... I think a recurring theme in this conversation is that I was stuck playing pretty rigid music with some of the original people I came up with. It sounds bad. I don't mean that. It's just we were into, like, they were into more, into a certain mold of punk. And I liked some of it, but not all of it. I definitely wanted to do some weirder stuff. So I remember the first time any of us got amps, one of my friends got a Marshall amp. And he was like, look how loud we can go. And I remember we were in his living room after practice, and I just saw this button that said delay, this knob that said delay. And when I turned it up, I was like, that's that sound I've been hearing on all music ever. You know, right. I was like, oh, this, you can you can hit a note and then it echoes. I was like, that's so mind blowing. And I was like, totally blown away by it. And I was like, afterwards, I figured out that, oh yeah, this is something you can get in pedals. And shortly after that, I think I saw Omar Rodriguez Lopez, who's one of my favorite guitarists of all time.
He's unreal, man.
And I saw the pedal. Yeah, I mean, speaking of people who seared themselves into your consciousness at a certain age, like, he blew my mind and kind of opened the pedal floodgates for me. So, yeah, I'm super duper into pedals. Not as much as I mean, you know, it's like everybody, I guess. It's an expensive thing to be into. But I've gotten my pedal situation to a level that I like now, and I can like bring little bits in and take little bits out. But yeah, I think it's really important in terms of like developing your signature sound, hopefully, and expressing yourself in a way that someone else doesn't.
No, I agree. I think it's a really important thing. So now you're in New York, you're working in bands, you're doing the OST project, you're doing Cinemarter, when did Arc Girls actually like start for you?
Arc Girls. That was,
so I know you said like COVID really kind of squashed that project.
It fucked it up. Yeah. Art Girls, it's like, I'm so terrible with, I remember really pointless details about movies really fucking well, but I can't remember, like, when my dad's birthday is. So I can't remember what year. I think, like, I'm going to guess Art Girls has been around for, like, 2 years. Me and Atticus the singer had been in a band with Luke, who plays drums on the last Cinemarta record, but he's not in the live band. We had been in a band together called A Year and Change, which was kind of like a math pop punk
sure.
kind of band, I guess. And it was me, Luke, a guy named Ben from Hannibal, Montana, and this singer named Atticus, who has this like phenomenal... Yeah, Hannibal, Montana is a good
that's
name.
That's a dumb name. That's so good. That's so...
It's so dumb, it's good.
But that's like... That's a perfect band name. Okay, I'm
upset. Yeah.
I'm like actually like upset. That's so good.
Right. And I think, I don't know if they play shows anymore, but we met the singer named Atticus, who had this like fucking phenomenal voice.
He's amazing.
And,
like even, yeah, even when he started singing, nice. All of my friends who were at that show were like, who is this guy? Cause he's unreal.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a great singer.
It's just one of those rare voices you come across. You're like, oh shit, that guy can do the thing.
Yeah. Right.
He can do the thing real good. Yeah, the band we were all in together, A Year and Change, never really took off. Like it was just, we played a few shows and it was becoming a pain in the ass. And eventually, I think like Luke, he had some stuff going on, a bunch of life stuff, good stuff. It just took him away from the band. And then the bassist moved to a different state, and me and Atticus were like, let's just form another band and make it really scrappy and make the emphasis be playing live shows and let's just get out there as quick as possible. And so for me, it was like, I've got my solo thing in Cinemarta, and then I've got this collaborative thing with Atticus. And we just started practicing and like putting stuff together, like not like really not overthinking things, just trying to let it come as quick as possible. And dude, we went through like, I don't know, like 4 drummers and 6 bassists. Everyone just kept like joining for a month and something would happen. And we played a bunch of shows
that
and we recorded
like
a bit. It does.
Definitely sounds like bands, for sure.
That's the band problem. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. That project was like, anyone I showed it to really seemed to like it, and it worked really well.
Well, the visuals and like the music videos were wild.
Oh,
like,
cool. Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah.
Like, I remember my friend Savannah, who was playing bass with me for that Amy Incident show. She was like, this is a crazy music. Like, she's not really a hardcore
yeah.
person, or she's not even like a really big, like heavy person, but she was like, have you looked up Art Girl since the show? And I was like, no, not really. And she was like, their music videos is like him covered in milk. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, all right, you gotta send me this link like right now. And then she sent me, I'm like, all right, this is insane. And that's what I definitely asked if you wanted to be in the podcast. So I was like, okay, I want to get to the bottom of this. These visuals are insane.
Yeah.
But it worked so well for the band. Like, it worked.
Mm.
Like, when you were talking about, like, finding your sound and finding your aesthetic, like, I know exactly what that band is. And you guys did a great job of creating that. You know what I mean?
Oh, cool. Thanks, dude.
Yeah,
yeah,
that
was
awesome.
Yeah, oh, that's so funny. I was trying to... So I was filming that video and throwing milk at him off camera at the same time. And we didn't have enough milk, so we diluted it with water, and it was freezing, and it was freezing out, and he just had no top on. And I was trying not to get my hand in the shot, just splashing him with milk, trying not to have him, like, drown, like inhale all the milk water as he was singing. I was just laughing so hard, and I was trying to keep that off the sound as well. But I feel like that is one of those projects that like feels a little bit like lightning in a bottle. Like, when we come together, we make good shit, and it's got an identity. But for whatever reason, it really is like fucking hard to keep it going. Like, members coming and going, and just different extraneous circumstances fucking it up. And then COVID happened, and it just really put a stop to it. And I don't know, it's like, maybe, I don't know, he's doing some solo stuff now. Maybe at some point we can get it back going, but it's just hard to tell. Everything's so uncertain now.
Well, that'd be like, that's a really good point to bring up as well. How else has COVID like affected you in general? And like, how has affected, like, what do you think being an artist in this crazy world where pandemics can just happen? Like, what does that for you as like a creative, when you're saying like the pros and cons, like, what do you think is about that?
I definitely had a fucking existential crisis when I was like, oh, shows are going away. Oh, that's the thing I look forward to most in the world and the whole reason I exist. And I was like, what the hell? Like, I definitely had a rough month or so getting my head around the uncertainty of all that. It was just like, Jesus Christ, well, this is terrifying.
Something that's very interesting to me, which is like, I've definitely talked to about a lot of people, which is, as musicians and as creatives, we have this, well, everyone else has a day job, everyone else works there, you know, to rent money and everything else, but we still want to remain creative and still working.
Yeah.
But, and we have these times where it's like, oh, if I could only get like 2 weeks off to go do this.
Yes.
Or, oh, I would do A, B, and C, and D if I just didn't have work today.
Yeah.
But then when
then you get all that time.
And then you're like, oh, but because the rest of the world isn't like functioning, you're like, oh, yeah. I still don't know what I should be doing. Like, you like, if you add all like the mental stuff across from just like the pandemic and like everything, like, yeah, we have the time to create, but like I think we're similar where I thrive off playing live so much, and I thrive off like playing shows and interacting with people.
Yeah.
That for me, it's so hard to make myself stay creative. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Dude, I think there's a huge lesson in it that hurts initially, but it's an important thing to learn, is that the answer to some of our problems is, as you said, it's not 2 weeks off from work. Like, you know, it's like, you can, I found myself in various stages of my life saying the same thing. Like, if I just had all this more time, I'd do it. But then I wake up on the day and I'm like, man, fucking life is weird. Maybe I should just play video games. You know,
I totally agree.
Like, and that struggle, there's something reassuring about the whole experience and like having a bit of time to like, sit with that, is like, a lot of like, it just hammers it home a little bit more succinctly that it's on you to create the environment for yourself that makes it so you can make stuff, and that making that stuff is fun to do, and it's not so much about like this hustle or die mentality, but it's actually a natural thing that plays into your life and that you want to do. You know, it, like,
no,
you wake
sure.
up in the morning like, I get to do that cool thing. I get to, you know, it's not looming over you so much. And I think a lot of that is learning how to calibrate the amount of shit we do, where it's like, you paralyze yourself by being like, I need to make this album, I need to go promote it, I need to be a social media person with 10,000 followers, blah, 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 blah. It's like, actually, most of that stuff gets done by just doing one small thing a day and building to this bigger whole. It's so important.
I cannot agree with you more. Like, if it's one thing where I'm like, oh, if I just get one thing done throughout the whole day, it'll make me feel so much better about just like,
dude,
staying on the line, staying focused, and like keep grinding.
Yeah.
But man, when you get in that, if you get in that mindset where you watch every Friday or every Halloween or every Nightmare, I had probably the least productive September and October I've ever had
yeah.
in my life, because it was so depressing.
Yeah. Oh, dude. I hear you. And I think part of it, too, is important. You got to, like, you know, I mean, everyone knows that we are going through something that is super unprecedented. So you got to be a certain amount of, you got to be gentle on yourself to a certain degree, too. Like, maybe you needed that September where you just fucking bottomed out and just chilled the fuck out, watched a bunch of movies, so that you get a better view of what you actually need to do. And you, like, your alarm bells will always go off when you do something bad for too long. You're like, okay, I'm not getting anything done. This isn't nice. And the opposite side of that is, I'm trying to do too much and I'm oppressive to myself and I fucking hate, I like, creativity is just scary to me now. That's the polar opposite. of just watching movies all the time, you know, watching all the Halloweens, I think. And the one benefit of all this time, the one big benefit of all this time is learning how to calibrate that experience and to be somewhere in the middle, I think, where you're just like, you know, the fucking chocolate I shouldn't be eating and the movie, the video games I shouldn't be playing, they taste better and feel better if I just did the one small thing in the day that means I've done something productive, you know, and it doesn't have to be oppressive. It can be just like, okay, I need to do a podcast. Okay, what's that mean? Maybe if I just set up that one piece of equipment that's a thorn in my side today, boom, that's done. Or like for me, it's like, I'm writing 12 songs for an album, so that's fucking terrifying. But if I can just sit with my guitar and make the A part of the song join the B part of that one song, I did something.
That's,
you know, and
that's
I'm
a
in
great
a,
day.
I'm in a better place tomorrow than I was today. And I guess for me, it's just always keeping notice of like letting too much time go where you do nothing, or doing too much time where you're trying to do everything. And it's just trying to be in the middle. The middle path is usually the better path.
Dude, I mean, I think at least you totally get it. You're a very wise person. I appreciate your wisdom and the helpfulness, because being an artist in COVID, or honestly at any time, is an extremely, it's tough. It's really hard, but at the same time,
if you want to have shitty mental health, be an artist.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I think at the same time, like, even like hearing people somewhat be positive about the future, like me and you,
yeah.
And even just like hearing about it makes you feel like that the walls are not closing in. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, dude, whether I like it or not, I've got this optimist dickhead inside me sometimes that, like, you know, things that suck fucking suck. But if it's not always, you don't always notice it in the moment. Sometimes it takes a year. Sometimes you can get it down to where it only takes a day, but you can start looking back and be like, oh, I learned shit from that. So if you learned a bunch of shit from a crappy experience, it's no longer just hell. It's an educational experience. And I think there's like so much to learn from this. I know for sure I'm never going to take for granted a fucking base, like a warehouse show in Brooklyn ever again. Even if all the bands suck and I kind of like my back hurts a little bit from standing and pretending I care, I'm still going to love the crap out of that experience, because it's so like you can't take it for granted anymore, you know?
I miss live shows so much.
live shows, bodies being together in a space, dude. Oh my God, man.
And it's a weird mental thing where we've like had to rewire, like, oh, like people aren't good for us. Oh, we can't be around people. Like other people are poisonous. Like that's a really weird mental state that we've had to put ourselves in. Like I've had to rewire my entire 24 years of life.
are you in general a bit more of a, what's the word?
Oh, I'm an extrovert. I'm an extrovert to every extent. Like,
This must be extra tough then.
It sucks. It absolutely sucks. But at the same time, like, so it's like weird. Like when I'm an introvert, I'm like very into writing and I'm like working on music and I'm like doing everything that I like want to do. But I get so much fuel from being around people and like talking and having like real experiences to write about, almost like in a Kerouacian like bullshit. Like experiencing life like helps me reflect and delve what I want to write about and what I want to create like musically. So I think being an extrovert definitely sucks, but I wish I was an introvert and be like, oh, I'm just gonna like work on like my 12 song album for like a week. Like I can do that. Okay, cool. I'll make coffee or tea and I'll just sit, and then by the end of the week it's done. Like I cannot. I wish I could be like that, but I definitely cannot. Yeah. You know.
You just can't fight against your nature. It's like, you can wrestle with that and like try and make it different, but that's not going to make you more productive. I think like I've learned that the opposite, I guess. Like I've wanted to be more extroverted a lot of my life, but I'm just fucking not. And the more, like you sound like you've accepted the parts of you that are very extroverted and you need to be in social situations and around people very much so. So if it's sucking for me, if I'm missing people, if I'm missing being in crowds of people, it must really suck for extroverts out there. Like,
oh my God.
I look at some of my friends, like people who just need, you know, people who just want to go to the fucking bar and sit down and drink and have a chat with three other people. It's like, Where did that go?
But it's interesting that, like, I feel like a lot of extroverts, like, cling to the live things. And if you say that you're more of an extroverted person, like, do you, it's interesting because you still, like, need the live experience, but then you just want to, like, leave. It's a very, it's a very good separation that you have.
It's, yeah, I mean, it has troubles. Like, I, like, if I go to a party with just a tiny bit of anxiety, I'm fucked. I can't talk to anyone. I need to get the hell out of there. But there's something about the punk, rap, rock, indie music scene, maybe even the pop scene, that, like, when it comes to live music and people in spaces, it doesn't bother me at all. I fucking love it. I especially love being on stage, and I love talking to people afterwards. That's the only time I can be extroverted. For the most part, I fucking, people, it's just like, it's the cliche. It takes a huge amount of energy out of me. It, like, it scares me, like, to be at, like, a certain, like, I don't know, to be in a room full of people where there isn't music involved is just, like, a fucking nightmare for me a lot of the time.
Right.
Yeah, but it's weird. I don't know. Yeah, you got to look at the way you're built and try and work with it, I guess, you know?
For sure, man. But, okay, so you have Cinemartyr. You're working really hard on that. Art Girls, maybe on the future. Anything else that you have working on right now, man, or just, like, trying to keep it together? Because that is also okay. Like, that's also okay that you're allowed to have that.
Yeah, I would say for anyone who listens to stuff like this, like, just because someone is lucky enough to be feeling productive now doesn't mean you have to match up to that. You know, sometimes this stuff comes in bursts, and your burst might come after the vaccine has started feeling a little more normal for people. It might come, you know, at the weirdest time, but yeah, sorry, I feel like sometimes I gotta make disclaimers before I go off about my projects, because I don't want a productive virtue signal or productive signal or whatever. But I'm doing all right. Like, I yesterday just handed off a bunch of songs to one of the other musicians that's going to be recording on the album, so he can put some stuff to it. And that was a huge, like, milestone for me. That was like, today's just kind of a chill day. I'm like, oh fuck, that's done finally. So I'm in the stages of working some of the live tracks out with other musicians, and we're going to bring that to the studio just to do a few instruments soon, and then I'm going to record the rest at home. And then for the first time ever, I'm handing all the tracks off to a professional studio, and I'm not worrying about mixing, and that is the most exciting thing in the world.
That's a great thing. If you don't have to strive through the mixing mastering process, oh my god, it's brutal.
I'm so excited to bring it to a guy who is able to make, like, he's known for making really thick, professional sounding, fucking aggressive rock music, exciting, energetic stuff, and I don't have to get it there in terms of mixing, because I've, for the last fucking 2 decades, that's all I've done. I've, like, spent years on mixing, and I'm done. I'm never doing that again.
Sure.
So yeah, there's that, and I'm just writing at the moment as well, trying to write a book for the past 4 fucking years. And then, as with a lot of us, I guess there's that existential reckoning of, like, looking at everything you're doing and seeing how you want to make it work going forward. My big thing is doing a DIY tour of the States in a couple of years, a year or 2 years, depending on how all this plays out. You know, hopefully we get to a stage where that can happen again. And my big fucking goal, so that I can, like, die happy, is to tour the States for a month and a half, play basements, play wherever. That is so exotic to me as an Irish person or a person from Europe. Like, I've played, we don't have basements in our houses in Ireland. So playing basement shows to me is, like, the coolest fucking thing. I've never been able to tour the US. And that's, like, everything I'm doing is kind of pointing towards that. So,
well, if you need a basement in Boston to play a show at, I throw basement shows all the time, so just let me know, right?
Fuck yes. I would gladly take you up on that offer.
Hit me up, man. Just do it.
Yeah, and I would love to return the favor in Ireland, hook you up with some contacts if you want to do Europe.
Sounds great. I would love that, man. Dude, Shane, thank you so much for hanging, talking. You're an extremely wise and creative person, and just, man, keep it going, dude. That's all I can. That's all I can say, bro.
It's very nice of you to say, man. I appreciate it, and I think you're a very sweet and open and creative person too. And I've very much enjoy chatting with you. I can chat. I could chat for as long as you want. And also, if you want to do this again sometime, just let me know.
Yeah, let's do it. I will. Anytime you ever want to promote anything or anything you need to get done, dude, I'm happy to help out in any contribution I possibly can. Let's get together. Let's put a show on. Let's just have a blast when this is all over, dude.
Hell yes, dude. Also, just so you know, I have a mailing list. I'll promote this in the usual standard ways, but in a couple of weeks, I'll be putting something out with the mailing list. So I'll attach this to that.
Sounds great.
Which hits a bigger audience than the Instagram tends to. So,
yeah, no, totally. Yeah. Cool. I mean, dude, I have the podcast because connecting with people and sharing creativity and like sharing knowledge is a very important thing to me. And just like looking at other people, it's really, really important stuff, dude. So
hell yeah. Hell yeah.
So thank you so much again, man. And I'm going to.
Cool.
I'll see you later. Right, dude.
Yeah. All right. Have a good evening.
You too, man.
Tell Boston I said hi.
I will. I'll yell
I'll tell
the
New York
streets.
You said hi. Yes.
Please do.
All right, dude. All the best.